Hi, my name is April Arsbal, and I'm here with Pat Kramer. We are doing an interview on the American Studies Project for Professor Lori Green. It is November 1st, 2017, and we're here at Pat Kramer's home located in Austin, Texas. We're going to talk to Pat about her experience with activism in Austin, Texas. So to start off, when and where were you born?
I was born in Seattle, Washington in 1949. And I moved to Austin in 1967 to go to UT, and I don't know why I decided on UT at all. They had this program called Plan 2, and that was my major. It was Plan 2, which is basically you don't know anything, so you just... And I didn't graduate until 1977, and I graduated with a Bachelor of Science in Nursing because my plan at the time when I started studying nursing was I knew that nurses made a lot of money and I was going to become a nurse and make a lot of money and of course save it all because I was a hippie and you save money, you don't buy shit. And then I was going to move out to the country. You know, and live out on a farm. That was my idea. Well, in the meantime, that's when we went out on strike, and I, of course, you know, had to quit school so I could participate actively in the strike, you know, and all these people came out to our picket line, the New American Movement folks. And I became part of the Bread and Roses Collective, which was this house over in just west of UT. It wasn't Pearl, maybe it was Rio Grande, I can't remember. It was over there. And it was the progressive organizing space at UT, and the New American Movement met out of there and other groups did too. And so we had all this labor organizing going on over there, and oh, we just had a good old time and organizing marches, you know, against the nuclear power plant and anything else that we need to organize around. And my experience at UT was very great. I had a great time at UT. You could drop in and drop out so easily, and it was so inexpensive that you could, I dropped out and went to Mexico for a while and came back, and then I went back to school, and then something happened, and I moved to Houston and went to work in Houston for a while and came back, and then I went on that trip around the world with that international school, and when I came back, that was the early 70s, I wanted to keep on traveling, and I knew that I would get embedded, though, once I returned, and sure enough, that is just what happened, is I got embedded in life back in Austin, and so I stayed, and that's, I think, that may have been when I decided to study nursing. I don't know, because that was, and I graduated, and I must have been working. I don't know. I was down in Houston for a while, working, and it was when I was taking classes for nursing school, and I was a shuttle bus driver, and I was active with the Bread and Roses and everything like that, and I dropped out when we went on strike because it was such a thrilling experience. I had to be part of it. And
so what type of strikes were you involved in?
Well, just that one, but I'll tell you what, back earlier in Austin history was the economy furniture worker strike, which still resonated at that time in Austin. And Gonzalo Barrientos, who used to be our state senator, was an activist with the economy furniture strike. He helped organize the Latinos. And the Chicano movement was going on at the same time. You know, and there was there was marches from St. Ed's down South Congress to the Capitol for the farm workers. Oh, and Cesar Chavez. They were organizing for Cesar Chavez. And then when the workers down in the valley thought that Cesar Chavez wasn't getting around to them fast enough, they formed the Texas Farm Workers Union. And so we all supported the Texas Farm Workers Union. Marched to the Capitol. And there is just lots of stuff going on. And I just learned so much about the labor movement and the history of progressive, you know, progressivism mm-hmm. in the United States from the New American Movement people. And the Women's Political Caucus formed, I don't know when, nationally, but I remember it was around, I think Jana Zumbrun, who was a lesbian activist, joined the Women's Political Caucus around 75, and they cut their teeth on political endorsements and organizing people to volunteer for candidates and get out the vote and get people elected. Well, after the success of the Women's Political Caucus, Jana was one who wanted to start the Lesbian Gay Political Caucus and wanted to endorse. And I had come out in 76, and so me and my girlfriend fell right into that organizing. And there was Anita Bryant was going through the United States with her campaign to save the children from homosexuals. She was a spokesperson for orange juice, the Florida orange juice industry. And she came through town and we just organized a big old rally down on Auditorium Shores, you know, against her. And there was this, these two distinguished retired military people, people who had been kicked out of the military for being gay. And they went on a national tour. And there was the MEMCC, the Metropolitan Community Church, had just formed, which was a queer church. And so Troy Perry, who was a minister who started the church, he went on a tour. And so we wanted Austin to be on their tour, so we organized a banquet for them. And that was right around Anita Bryant time and all that time. And it was after that, 78, that we formed the Lesbian Gay Political Caucus here in Austin. And Jana and Steve Thomas were chair and co-chair. And my girlfriend was on the board. I was an activist. I just did whatever needed to be done mm-hmm. at the time. And so after that, I stopped focusing on issue campaigns like the anti-nukes and abortion rights and women's rights, and went more for electoral politics. But all sorts of organizations were going on, and we all helped everything that we could. So anyway, that was 78, and then in 79, Houston formed their political caucus. But we were first in the state. And then also in the early 80s, we formed a lobbying organization too. But that's the 80s, and we're not into that. And let's see.
So tell me your experience in, I guess, creating one of the first lesbian gay...
We used mimeographs, okay? There wasn't, I don't even know if they had a Xerox machine back then. Mm-hmm. Okay, so we ran mimeographs, you know, and to our newsletters.
Right.
Were mimeographs. We had borrowed a mimeograph machine from down... at that place on the drag.
Mm-hmm.
People's Community Clinic started in the basement of that Congregational Church right there.
Oh, wow, because that's Okay.
That's, yeah, it was in the basement of that church that they started People's Community Clinic. And it was there for many years. Where was I going with that? I don't know. Let's see. And People's Community Clinic, and they help people, you know, a bunch of hippies, mm-hmm. you know, go there, you know, to get their health care. But being if you were a UT student, you could get health care at the UT Health Center.
Right.
Which was very fortunate. The Breakfast Project was Larry Jackson, and it was part of the black activist movement in East Austin, coming out of East Austin. And the Brown Berets were the Chicano activists at the time. And they were very active too, you know, supporting all the labor struggles. And
right.
And they had these Brown Berets and went around in camo, you know. And they were organizing, you know, about that boat racism, getting after those that boating stuff in East Austin.
Can
over by Fiesta
bit?
Gardens.
Explain a little bit about the boat.
So it was every summer, Austin, it was like this old Austin Chamber of Commerce types organized an annual summer fair in Fest in August of all times. August, oh my God, so hot here to do anything. But they would have music, and then part of their things was having these boat races on Town Lake east of I-35. And it would deafen the community for days with these boats. And it was all these rich white people. And so, of course, you know, the people felt, you know, like they were being sat upon. And so, anyway, that was one of the projects that the Brown Berets took on, was getting the boat races out of East Austin. So all the UT activists went to go help, you know, and there was demonstrations and people getting beat up and by the cops and everything like that. But eventually, you know, those boat races did get stopped. And yeah, it was successful.
How long did it take for that?
Oh, I don't know. Not too long, a couple years maybe. Yeah, I can't remember when they stopped it. I would have to look it up, you know. And and there was just a lot of Chicano activism, black activism, and that the Breakfast Project, Larry Jackson's Breakfast Project, was part of that. Sending kids over to the UT to collect money, you know, for just doing whatever the hell Larry Jackson wanted to do. I do not know what he wanted to do. And let's see. I remember the biggest anti-war demonstration. I remember just being on 10th Street in between Congress and Colorado. And because I think we were heading from the governor's mansion down to the Capitol. And the 10th Street was packed solid with people. And it was a lot of UT, you know, professors and
right.
workers and students.
At that time, were most of was the population mostly UT students, people from the university in Austin?
Well.
Because I know it wasn't as developed as it is now.
Well, obviously. You know what? I don't know how many students were in the student body at the time. But with a population of 150,000, I don't know if they included the students in their count. I don't know. So anyway, yes, UT students were a big part. They were the leaders of the anti-war effort in Austin. It came out of UT. I know that SDS was active, but I never found out about SDS until, you know, later on. You know, New American Movement was the first activist organization, you know, progressive organization that I associated with. Mm-hmm. And SDS, I guess, came before that.
And what was SDS?
Students for Democratic Society.
Okay.
And they organized, you know, on campus in the 60s, anti-war efforts. And, you know, I'm not familiar with the early stuff of that. But I know it was a large anti-war group. And Black Panthers was around at that time too. And all sorts of stuff going on. It was a time of a lot of people, you know.
Doing a lot of things.
Yeah, and the thing was, is that the 50s was such a repressive era. You know, it's like, you know, it's so white bread. So Eisenhower, Ike and Mamie Eisenhower, and Leave It to Beaver, and it was just so unreal. It didn't really have anything to do with reality, what we were seeing as students on campus. It was, you know, it was a totally different world, and I think, you know, it just broadened everybody's horizons to be in Austin at the time and coming from a repressive society, you know, era of the 50s, and all of a sudden to have people, you know, and I guess it all came from the Black movement, the civil rights movement. That started all the activism in the 50s, and it all bowled over into the 60s, and everybody started to question and disagree on the status quo and going along with the president and whatever the general said. Oh, no.
Well, especially in Austin, because Austin is so liberal compared to the rest of Texas in general, so.
Mm-hmm. And I didn't know that at the time, but hey, 50 years ago. And let's see. I do remember running north from the Capitol, you know, trying to get out of the tear gas after one of the demonstrations. That may have been that big one. I think that was after Kent State. In the 70s,
right,
there was these students killed on Kent State campus. And people erupted over that. And also, there was some secret bombing of, like, Tonkin Bay. People got real upset over that. And that spawned big demonstrations, you know, when shit would hit the fan like that. And so it would be really big protests. And on campus, there was this place called the Chuck Wagon Cafe. And that's where a lot of people met up and talked about stuff. And there was even a sit-in there. And, I don't know if they used tear gas to shut it down or not. Oh, yeah. I never wanted to be a housewife. I love my parents deeply, but when they're, you know, it's like my mom's life was all about her children.
Right.
And keeping the house.
Well, that was a status quo back then.
Yeah.
To be a housewife.
Yeah. And I didn't want to have anything to do with that.
Right.
I knew that way back when. I knew that was not for me. And so I always was, you know, doing whatever the hell I wanted to do. And, you know, of course it drove my parents crazy. But, you know, they still supported me.
Right.
And I was rude. I'm sure I was just a terrible child at sometimes. I'm sure of that. But I'm grateful to them now, you know, for everything they did for me. And I wouldn't be the person I was. But I was just ready to try anything new. And I wasn't scared. And thankfully, you know, I'm still around to tell these tales.
Yeah.
And thankfully, I never had to go to jail or anything like that. I went to jail one time. That was when, I think that may have been the 70s. I can't remember. It was Kissinger, Henry Kissinger, mm-hmm, who had been Secretary of State under Nixon.
We'd have to look that one up.
I know. Henry Kissinger came to town. We all knew he was a war criminal. And so we had a demonstration planned. on the UT campus where he was speaking. We all just stood up silently and held a banner that said, you know, you're a war criminal or something like that. And the police all arrested us and threw us in jail. And that was the first time I'd been jailed as part of a protest. But we did have a lawyer, Bobby Nelson, all lined up. She and her husband, Martin Wigington, owned the Split Rail, which was a great place to go to, just south of the river. And then they had this place called Emma Joe's up by Weisville on Guadalupe. Mm-hmm. So anyway, Bobby Nelson was our attorney. And of course, we just spent, you know, a few hours singing songs in the jail, and then they got us out. It was so funny. This was when I was a little straight girl, and I had gone with my boyfriend the previous night to a gay bar with our gay friend. It was called Pearl Street Warehouse. And he got into a fight with the DJ. Well, they called the cops, and they hauled our gay friend down to jail. And so I stupidly talked my boyfriend into going down to the police department and telling them he did nothing wrong and try to get him out. And of course, when we went down to the police department and I knocked on the door, my boyfriend tried to talk me out of it. But, oh no, I wouldn't hear that. And I'm sure alcohol was involved. And so we went down to the cop shop and I knocked on the door and they opened it up. And I said, we're here, Kent Kennington, he was arrested, and we wanted to see if we could get him out. He said, oh, do you? And he said, just wait a moment. So he closed the door, and then he opened the full door, and he and another cop came out and arrested us both and threw us in jail overnight for public intoxication.
Oh, no.
It was, and so we spent the night in jail the night before our planned demonstration. And I was in a cell with this woman who had been high on drugs at some concert, and they popped her and threw her in jail. So we got out the next morning. I went over to UT, you know, we were in the demonstration. By God, I was back in the same booking room the very next afternoon. And the cop looked down at me. He said, weren't you in here last night? And what were you in for? You know, I said, armed robbery. Yeah, I was such a smartass, yeah. But anyway, it was so funny. The two times I've been in jail, it was back to back. You know, night overnight, and then a few hours the next afternoon, and you know, it was funny. That must have been like 75, something like that, because I was still a little girl, straight girl.
What age were you at that time?
Let's see. I was born in 49, so I was like 26.
Okay.
In 75. I was a late bloomer. What happened was this girl who was in one of my classes for nursing school, she went to Galveston to go to PA school, physician assistant school, and she came back, and when she came over to visit me, she said, guess what, Pat? I said, what? She said, I've got a girlfriend. I said, no. And I had never thought about that. You know, I've never thought about it. Crossed my mind. But after she talked about it, I started thinking, well, you know, I don't have a lot of girlfriends. You know, I mostly hang out with the guys, you know. And that's very interesting. And that just sort of set my mind in gear. And then one of the other shuttle bus drivers was this girl. And she, you know, made it known that she was bisexual. Well, anyway, I sort of developed a crush on her. And I asked her out. And that was how I came out, was we kissed, I fell in love, you know, and oh, we were meant to be. And I had no problem being queer. I didn't have any problem with that. There was no, I didn't go to, my family didn't have any church in our house. You know, we didn't get told what was right and wrong, except you be good, you know, follow the golden rule, you know, sort of stuff like that. So I had, you know, I didn't think there was anything wrong with it. Some of the guys I knew, oh, this one guy said, He said, oh, that's so terrible. That's like taking a ice cream cone and dipping it in shit. That's what he called me. Isn't that awful? Yeah, yeah, that was his reaction to my news. Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah.
A horrible analogy.
Oh, yeah. Oh, perfect for him, oh, you know. Gosh. So, anyway, but I didn't have any problem with that. There was a women's community here like you wouldn't believe. We had our own bands, we had dances, we gave dances, we had so much going on. Then there was the Houston Women's International thing in 77, and that was right after I'd come out, so I knew a bunch of women who'd gone down for that, and you know, and we did some work on campus, you know, organizing and supporting that effort, you know, raising money to help women get to Houston and stuff right. like that. So it was just a lot of, and all these lesbians, a lot of them were activists, you know, and so these were all the people we turned to help us work on campaigns and sign them up and become members of the Lesbian Gay Political Caucus, and of course they all became members. You know, we were a young, burgeoning movement. The gay, you know, the Stonewall had been in 1969. In New York City. That was what they called the start of the gay rights movement. And earlier in Austin, there had been a radical gay or the gay radical gay front, something like that. Mm-hmm. Gay Liberation Front had formed. But I didn't know anything about that. Jana did, Jana Zumbrun. She and her girlfriend started a lesbian newsletter that went out.
Oh, cool.
Oh, yeah. So, you know, and then she was real active with the Women's Political Caucus, and then we all started being lesbian gay activists. And we also went to the Women's Political Caucus because, you know, there was a bunch of people we knew were active in there. Mm-hmm. And so we were active too.
So did you become an activist after you came out, or was it before?
Before.
You did a little bit
before. Before. Definitely before. It was when I went on strike is when I would say I became an activist, because it was like organized. Mm-hmm. Before, I was an individual, not a member of any organization. After 74 or 75, whenever that strike was when I became a member of an organization.
Okay.
And worked with an organization. No. And New American Movement was all over the country. You know, and I went to a national convention up in Chicago, met all these Chicago activists, these old communists. Oh, it was just great. We had a great time. We had just a super time. And, you know, me and my girlfriend drove up there, too. And she was part of New American Movement, too. Mm-hmm. You know, when she and I started going together, she started going to Bread and Roses. We all started doing everything together. She became an activist, too. And we went up to Chicago for this national convention and ended up staying there for the summer. And we got a job doing some typing or something like that for some leftist up there. I can't remember who it was, but it was this place they called the Summer Palace. It was this big apartment on the south side of Chicago, but it had these 12-foot ceilings, huge rooms. Mm-hmm. It was a real old building, you know, back when they made these huge old buildings, and he lived in that. And so we stayed there. It was fun. We had a great time. And let's see, maybe that wasn't the summer of the convention, because that was the summer that Elvis Presley died. Oh, you know how you kind of mark things, but after that convention, I got a ride with some activists from the West Coast, and I headed to California because I didn't have to be back at work or anything until September. And I think Elvis died in August. I'm not sure. But that was the year I went to the West Coast And I visited them, and then I hitchhiked up and down the coast and hitchhiked back. People hitchhiked in those days.
Oh, wow.
When I got back from my international travels and I landed in New York City, I hitchhiked to Ohio. To
really?
My parents' house. Yeah, to my parents'
just
house.
Everything you had, you just...
Yeah, I didn't have any. You know, it was just a backpack.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. You just hitchhike.
You just...
Yeah.
Stand on the street and be like, hey, can I get a ride?
Stick out your thumb with the sign and you get rides.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody
back then.
Did that. Yeah,
yeah,
it was. Yeah. And let's see. And I stayed involved with New American Movement for many years after that. But mostly I became active with the Lesbian Gay Electoral, mm-hmm. Lesbian Gay Political Caucus. We, our first year, 1980, was when we endorsed our first candidates and worked on their elections and got our people elected. And, you know, it was a new thing, you know, for Austin, you know, to have, you know, queer people asking questions about how you stood on 2106, which was the sodomy statute, which was said it was illegal for males or females to have sex with one another. You could only do it, you know, and it was a person commits an offense if they, oh gosh, I used to know the words because I was part of this theater group called I Pass for Straight in the late 80s, and we sang the words to the sodomy statute on on stage, you know, as part of our act, and it was hilarious.
Oh, I bet.
Yeah, we used to, and part of one year our ALGPC printed up a t-shirt. It was this Carrie Haddock's idea, 2106, and then we stamped repeat offender. And it did not get repealed until that case in Houston. Lawrence and somebody got caught having sex when the police busted into their apartment. They charged him with sodomy, and it went to the Supreme Court. And it went to the Supreme Court, and that was the law that brought down all the anti-gay statutes, mm-hmm. including the one in Texas.
Wow.
Yeah. I was part of a lawsuit in the mid-80s, too. Texas Human Rights Foundation, you know, filed a lawsuit, which was a gay, you know, like a NAACP or MILDEF,
right.
You know, the legal arm. And filed a lawsuit, you know, against 2106. And... you know, that was our main focus for years, was repealing, getting 2106 off the books. And it didn't happen until whenever, the 90s. So.
I mean, it still happened.
Yeah, oh yeah.
It took a while.
Yeah, and it's, yeah, so anyway, that it was, but we, and then, oh man, oh, there's this guy in town, Stephen Hotze, the neo-Nazi.
What?
Oh, he wanted to, they, in the late 70s, Austin Human Rights Commission passed a rule that said you couldn't discriminate in housing or public accommodations on the basis of sexual orientation. Well, Stephen Hotze led a movement called the Citizens for Decency to get that off the books because they wanted to be able to discriminate where they chose to.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't want to rent to a gay person. They wouldn't have to. They didn't want to serve a gay. And see what would be going on. We would be going into these clubs. This is what happened. We went to the Driscoll and to test the ordinance, okay? This fair housing ordinance. We went to the Driscoll and there's like four couples. Two boys, two girls, you know, two sets of girls, two sets of boys, and we started dancing as heterosexuals and then switched in the middle of the song. And they made us all leave. Oh, yes, they made us all leave. They got us out. And I think that's, I can't remember what the progression of events. Maybe that was, I don't remember. But we did that. We'd go to these bars, you know, that were advertising women only, happy hour for women. And then they would let the guys in, right? Well, all the dykes would go down there.
Right.
Oh,
right.
And they would throw us out too. Oh, God. Oh, yes. Oh, yes. We had quite the time.
Oh, my God.
Oh, yes. And let's see. What else? What else?
I know you were talking about the economic base of the Vietnam War.
Yes. Okay. So that's when I got explained, New American Movement explained about capitalism, mm-hmm. and what that was and how that was behind our war efforts and the, you know, the industry of weaponry, which I believe is probably the second most profitable industry behind pornography, which is the number one profitable industry in the world. And I bet weaponry would come number two. And it's people making money. Mm-hmm. And that's why, you know, they wanted to go to war, was to keep their, you know, markets open so they could sell their goods and stuff like that. And it was all economics. And I knew we had no fight with those Vietnamese people. We had no fight with them. You know, it was all economics. So that's what they taught me. And that's how I came to an understanding of the world and how it was. And all of a sudden, everything became very clear because you could see where the power was and, you know, what the economics were behind everything.
Yeah, wow.
So that was very interesting to me, and it answered all my questions. And
so you mentioned stuff about the Women's Political Caucus, and you talked about how it formed. So what other things do you do now as being a retired activist?
Well, I'll tell you, my heart is still, my heart is very soft for people, you know. Mm-hmm. I care deeply about people. And so now what I volunteer for is, you know, it's like family elder care. I'm a bill payer for a couple of disabled people. And Meals on Wheels, you know, my clients there, those people need a meal delivered to them, you know, every day. And I used to belong to the Handy Wheels. I would go out and fix things in people's houses and stuff like that. Whenever Project Transitions or one of the gay organizations needs volunteers, I always volunteer to show up, you know, and help do whatever it is that needs to get done. Mm-hmm. So, but I just don't serve on any boards.
Right.
So, except my neighborhood, except association, you know. But I always will, if there is a call to step up, I will always step up. Mm-hmm. I will always do that just because it's in me. And it's something that never leaves you. If you have a call to help others, you will always help
others.
Yeah,
you're going to do it.
And so, I think where all my motivation comes from is that basic old golden rule, do unto others, you know, as you would have them do unto you, and helping others. There is no other thing that I think you can do in your life that has greater value than helping others. That's it.
And I can agree with that.
Yeah. And so all the activism is all about improving conditions, mm-hmm. you know, making things more just and more fair. And that was the bottom line for everything. There was justice needed to be done, you know, fairness, equity, things were not mm-hmm. right. And guess what? They never will be. And so that's why there will always be people agitating to improve things.
Right.
To make changes. Right. And I guess, thank goodness, there always will be.
Yeah.
You know, because unfortunately, gosh, Of course, I just saw Blade Runner. Oh, man, I'll tell you. When I think about the future and what the future holds, it's kind of scary.
It is kind of scary.
Yeah.
I can agree.
Yeah, especially with global warming.
Oh.
And all our major port cities are going to be, you know, a large part of them are going to be underwater.
So was global warming and climate change and all that, was that ever...
No.
That wasn't ever talked about in
no.
the 70s? It wasn't even a thing?
No. Earth Day started in the 70s. And also recycling. I remember getting active in recycling in the late 60s, early 70s. That was a hippie thing. Yeah, you know, everybody disdained hippies. You know, your ideas are stupid. You know, we are a consumer culture, not a, you know...
Look at it now.
Yeah, right. And so, but all so many ideas have proved out to be a very valuable ideas. And so the Earth Day came out of environmental action, and Rachel Carson's book about DDT started a large, you know, awareness of the environment back then. That was in the 50s. Rachel Carson published her book that showed the harmful effects of DDT, and they got that banned. And I think everything sort of grew on the backs of that as time progresses. And the Matagorda Bay and anti-nuclear power was basically an environmental movement, you know, to protect the environment, because nuclear energy was, you know, potentially a catastrophic, you know, source of energy.
Yeah, no, it's hard to imagine what it's going to be like in the next couple years.
Yeah, well, hopefully we'll have a lot of wind and solar energy.
Right, but you never know.
Yeah.
So,
We had, back in the early 70s, I was living in this co-op over on west of Lamar, and this one guy, he wanted to start a big garden. And he taught some farmer into letting us have an acre of land off East Martin Luther King. And by God, we ran out there and we planted potatoes and stuff like that. Oh, my God. That was back to the, you know, that was an old hippie thing, you know.
Right.
Go grow your own food, you know, do all this stuff. Go back to the land.
And you did that.
Yeah, well, oh, yeah. But I'll tell you what, that acre was big. An acre is a huge amount of ground. Oh my God! It was just, oh my God! It was. He had a lot of ambitions, and I was sort of, you know, taken aback by the size of it.
Yeah.
But nevertheless, it's just one of the things we did. And you know, a Wheatsville Food Co-op formed back then too.
Oh, cool. Okay.
And before Wheatsville formed, there was a group going down to San Antonio every Saturday and going to the farmers market down there and bringing back produce. And we met at this place at 29th and Lamar. And that's where we would get together on Saturday afternoon and pick up our produce. And that sort of, the people involved in that sort of, I think, started Wheatsville Food Co-op.
Okay.
Back then.
Wow.
And there was this good food store on 29th Street, and which was the precursor to Whole Foods.
Right. I'm trying to think where all that is, because I used to.
It was a house on 29th, and you know that's where Breeds is. That is. It was one block west of Breeds.
I was walking
in a house on a corner.
Oh,
was Good Foods.
That's so cool.
I know.
I can't imagine that, because I live, you know, a mile, not even like maybe a half mile from there.
Yeah.
From that house, I would have never known it was that. It's really cool. So, what active change have you seen since being at UT? From the 70s to now, have you seen any sort of positive change, I guess you could say?
Well,
not too much.
Well, the thing is, oh man, I can't believe y'all have to pay so much intuition.
Yeah.
That is such a stressor. You know, it's, I just...
Because you were saying it was only $50
a semester. $50 a semester was our tuition.
Yeah.
And fees.
And then...
And books were the big thing. They were like $225.
That's the cost of one of my books.
God. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
So that's one change I can see is that it's so expensive to go there now.
Well, even living in student apartments and student housing, it's like, you know, living in an apartment north, you know, it's crazy. Yes, it's very expensive.
And the thing, another thing is that UT used to be the focal point in Austin. I mean, it was UT and state government were the two biggest employers. Mm-hmm. And now that the city has grown so much, I think UT is less of a focal point. For organizers.
Really?
I don't know. I'm not on campus, so I don't know.
There are a lot of organizations. It's very, very, very broad over there. I mean...
Yeah.
There's hundreds of organizations.
Yeah.
I've never been a part of one, so I don't really know how they work, but...
I'm sure it's like everything else, you know, you have a board, or it depends too, it may be ad hoc, or it may be formal, which you gotta have a, you know, board of directors and a bylaws and stuff like that, if it's formally organized, otherwise you just, you know, one way, if we wanted to get names on a mailing list, if we wanted to create a queer mailing list, well, we would write a petition, get people to sign a petition, and get their names and addresses that way. Put them on our mailing list, and put them on the ALGBC mailing list that way.
Oh, wow.
Oh, yeah.
That's one way to do it.
Yeah, just get a petition, get people to sign.
And they'll sign anything.
Of course.
Yeah.
If it's something you like, anti-2106, everybody will sign that.
And as long as they don't have to pay for anything, they'll sign it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you see a lot of people nowadays trying to get you to pay for something and then sign. And you're like,
nah.
Give me a second.
Nah. Uh-uh.
I'll walk away.
So I think that... I don't know what's going on at UT these days.
So you're not too familiar with it Mm-mm. anymore. When was the last time you went back?
I was over there registering voters in the 2000s. I remember I was still working, so it was before 2005. Gosh, that's 12 years ago. But I go to UT. Let's see, I've ridden my bike through recently. I can't remember. Oh, I took part in a study of kinesthetics at the gym, at the stadium. You know, they have a department of kinesthesiology. And these students were doing studies and they were looking for volunteers and came to my senior center. Paid $25 to walk on a treadmill. Hey, I did that.
All right.
Yeah, so yeah, that was the last time I was at UT. And I go to the UT women's basketball games sometimes.
Oh, cool.
And so now it's mostly two events. If there was a lecture I wanted to hear, mm-hmm. sometimes they have guest speakers, I will go to that. Right. In fact, I saw... who was it at spoke at the KUT studio? There was some a woman activist who. It was what's her name? The woman Gloria Steinem, didn't she? She came to UT. I think it was last year,
mm-hmm.
and spoke at in a KUT forum, and so I got to be in the audience for that.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. So if UT brings in speakers, you know, somebody I want to hear, I will go over,
mm-hmm.
you know, and hear what's going on. So if I hear something interesting going on, I'll go to UT.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I used to take classes. You know, they had informal classes. I would take informal classes from UT.
So you are pretty involved. You were pretty involved in your college young adult years. Were your siblings at all the same way, or even your parents, or were
no.
they?
No.
This is all new to them.
Yeah.
How do they react to it?
Well, my sister says she's proud of me.
Yeah.
And my mom and dad, I never told my mom and dad what I was doing. Never.
Like all college students.
Never, ever. They do not know anything that I did, you know, because I didn't want them. You know, I'm sure I knew they would be shocked and horrified. So, of course, I didn't tell them anything.
Right.
Come on. And my sister, you know, she was a year and a half older than I. And she was never a rebel. You know, I guess I was, because I just didn't like that status quo. It pissed me off. And then my brother, who's 5 years younger than I, he's the one that's severely ill with schizophrenia. And he graduated from high school, went to college, and had his first psychotic break, and has been ill ever since. And so he sold underground newspapers up in Dallas before he became ill.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I went to a Jimi Hendrix concert with him in Dallas after my family moved there. Yeah. And he was his mind was out there even then, but he became psychotic and his mind doesn't work anymore, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. And then I have a brother 5 years younger than him. And so he was 8 years old when I left the house, so I never really knew him.
Right.
And so he was a partier in college. He went to college at Ohio. He was a partier and a doper and stuff like that, and had fun. But he wasn't an organizer or anything like that.
Right.
But whenever I called, and then he moved to Austin in the 80s, he would always be a volunteer for me whenever I needed one. You know, when we had a march or anything like that, he would be a volunteer, you know.
So you guys are still
close. Yeah. One of the most exciting things that happened in 1979, we had our first national march on Washington for lesbian gay rights. And there was this guy in Houston, Ray Hill, who is still an activist down in Houston. And he was one of the main organizers. And our goal was to get 100,000 people to Washington, D.C. back then, which was... You know, that was our goal. And so we organized in Austin. We had fundraisers, you know, to get people to Austin. Of course, we all went. Of course we did. Oh, my God. That was so exciting.
Wait, all 100,000?
Huh? Oh, yes. We got 100,000 people there.
Wow.
And we had the mall, you know, we had speakers and... It was a big success, and that was our first national march for lesbian gay rights. And we had a great time.
You got 100,000 people over there.
Yeah, from all over the country. And that was we were riding those subway lines in D.C., and you'd get on the subway, be all queer people. Oh, it felt so great going to the grocery store. Oh, there's all these queer people everywhere. It was so exciting. We had a great time
doing that.
Yeah, it
That's
was
so cool.
awesome. It was awesome. And that was just 10 years after Stonewall.
And Stonewall was?
Was a bar in New York City that got raided by the cops.
Oh, I just learned about this.
Yes, and do you know why? Why the queens were all so mad? It was the day... that Judy Garland had died and her body was on display in New York City. So all the drag queens, of course, got all dressed up to go see Judy Garland. And that was going on all day in New York City. Everybody was passing through viewing Judy Garland. And then they went to the gay club, the Stonewall. And so when the cops tried to raid it that night, they just fought back. You know, ended up, they locked the police inside and were throwing things and setting cars on fire, cars on fire. And that was what they termed the start of the modern gay rights movement. But before then, there had been people, there had been gay organizers before them. Mm-hmm. They would dress in suit and ties and go march in front of the Capitol, you know, in D.C., protesting, you know, discrimination and stuff. I mean, they were brave people because you could lose your job, everything, you know, and just get totally screwed over if they found out you were gay. But these people were very brave. And they also, I guess, had their way of making a living.
Right.
Some of them were lawyers and stuff like that.
We eventually got to society saying, okay, it is fine. Yeah. You know, unfortunately, it had to be like that.
Mm-hmm.
It couldn't just always be fine.
Yeah. And but then I think there was another march in 83. I can't remember. But what one of our local girls said, we need to have a march in Austin. And we'd never had a gay rights march in Austin. So we did in 87. That was our first lesbian gay rights march. And that was the biggest march Austin had ever seen, they said.
It was successful.
Oh, yeah. It was huge.
How many people were in the march?
I think there was like 30,000.
Oh, wow.
Oh, yeah. It was huge.
Oh, wow.
Oh, yeah. It was a big success.
I mean, Washington was 100,000 in 80... Or yeah. No, sorry, 30-something.
Yeah,
wow.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But that was, you know, you didn't have to travel to come to Austin.
That's true. That's awesome.
So anyway, we couldn't believe it in the middle 90s when people said they wanted to get married. You want to get married? What the hell are you talking about? I mean, we were radical activists, you know?
Right.
We were not into getting married in joining the military? Oh my God, that was the two big things. You know, these, you know, centrist gays, not radical gays, mm-hmm. wanted to do. They wanted to get married and be able to join the military. We didn't know what to do with that. And they went ahead, you know, and they kept getting at it. It was these activists in Hawaii, actually, that started the marriage thing going.
Oh, wow.
Oh, yes, way back then. It was these activists in Hawaii.
That's really cool.
Mm-hmm.
I'm assuming in Honolulu, yeah. where the base was it like military aspect too? Like,
well, I don't know. I don't know what, you know. We were, you know, didn't know anything about them. You
right.
know, we were radical activists. Sorry, we don't do marriage. No.
No, that's funny.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
So your experience as an activist, you would say, has been positive.
Oh, definitely.
It's been great.
And I think that, you know, it's like, you know, I am still an activist, although I'm kind of retired, but I, you know, I am much more active than a lot of people. And I consider myself retired.
Right. So when you say you're more active than a lot of people?
It's like, you know, my neighbors who are raising their family. They don't have time to do anything.
Mm-hmm.
They're raising a family. You know, these people are making a living, you know, and it's like it's where your focus is, right? And my focus was never on making a living or having children or raising a family. So my focus was always on working for, you know, equality and justice. So, and I still am not concerned with, you know, making money.
Mm-hmm.
Or I have no children, so, you know, hey. That's, you know, I can continue to be active, really.
Right.
Compared to other people who have family to worry about,
mm-hmm.
and jobs, stuff like that. And my jobs were, you know, after I worked at a variety of jobs. I was a nurse for 2 years before I realized, oh, this was not for me.
For 2 years.
Oh, yes. It was. Oh,
and that's
what
you went to college for.
That's right. What I went to college for. And I dropped out in the middle of nursing school,
mm-hmm.
went back, got my degree, went to work at Brackenridge, stayed there 6 months,
oh,
and
great.
They wanted me to be a charge nurse. There was no way I was going to be a charge nurse.
What's a charge nurse?
That was in charge of the floor. It's like one time my patient, oh, nurse, and she started vomiting. bright red blood. And then she started, she started shedding bright red blood. I didn't know what to do, so I ran to the charge nurse, and she saved that woman's life. She said, "Pat, go get me a bucket of ice and some saline and an NG tube." And she was calling the ER emergency room to get her operating room ready for her. And she put an NG tube down on the woman's stomach and put in ice-cold saline to try to stop the bleeding. And aorta had given away at the lining of her stomach and was bleeding into her stomach. And that's why she vomited bright red blood and expelled bright red blood from her rectum. She was internally bleeding. I didn't know. I didn't know. And what if I was charge nurse and somebody came running to me with that? Oh, no way, Jose. I said, no, I am not. By action or inaction, you could kill somebody.
Sure.
Right. Oh, no. So what I did was I went into private duty nurse. And I went into different, you know, scenarios. And I was a, you know, visiting nurse. I had a license, and that's what they needed to give drugs and stuff like that. But eventually I left, and I started driving a school bus and for AISD, for the handicapped students.
Okay.
And when I was doing that, and I was doing, you know, I was on the board of this and that, and I was doing fundraising and being an activist, and I met a woman who was working for this representative out of Houston, and that's how I got my job in the Capitol, working for that rep, was meeting this woman at a mail-out, and this was in 1980, and so I went to work for this rep. And stayed there till 85. And then Cecilia Burke, who was a member of the political caucus, had just been appointed tax collector and asked me to come be her secretary at the tax office. And so I left the Capitol and I went to the county.
Wow.
And so I got to be, and Cecilia was an activist.
Right.
So I got to be an activist, you know, and I got at work. I was helping her. I was doing all the stuff that I needed to do. I was, you know, on several boards. And so, but that was my last job, was Travis County, and I retired after 20 years of service. So and I love my job.
In the early 2000s.
Yeah, in 2005.
That sounds awesome.
And I had started work at Travis County in 85 as I was working for Stacy Suits. He was a constable, and between sessions, your staff, you needed to find some work. So I worked for Stacy, and I needed some dental work done. So I begged him to make me a permanent employee so I could get dental insurance, and that's why I got my anniversary date was 85. Before I went to work in the tax office in 86. And I had been, you know, I worked on a couple of campaigns. I was paid staff on a couple of campaigns. Pam Reed, you know, took over from John Malloy, who took over from Ann Richards when she was county commissioner. Oh, yes. Oh, it was great.
You had a very, very busy life.
Yeah, and Ann Richards' husband, Dave Richards, was our attorney for our striking shuttle bus drivers, American Transit Union workers.
Right.
He was our attorney.
Oh, wow.
Oh, yes. He's an activist. Oh, yes. Him and Ann Richards were Democratic Party activists from the get-go. Wow. I saw her, too. Back in her drinking days, down at this bar, you know. Have you ever seen somebody stand on a aluminum can and touch the side with the foot and then it collapses? I saw her do that.
What?
Yeah.
I've never seen that in my life.
Yeah. Oh, it's like a magic trick. I saw Ann Richards do that, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Do you have any other final thoughts on being an activist?
I think it's a great life. I think that it's energizing, and it's and also it's like a wave that always is there. You know, it's like a wave of energy that's always there, I guess, as long as there's human beings, you know. Mm-hmm. Activism will always be there. It's just kind of energy.
Are you still in contact with any of your fellow activists?
Oh, sure. Oh, yes, definitely. Oh, definitely. I see them. Not as much, you know, parties.
Right.
Is where I'll run into them.
Right.
You know, or stuff like that.
But you still know them.
Or yes, there. Definitely.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for this. This is a great experience. It was a lot of fun talking to you.
Yes, April.
I really appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Mm-hmm. And let me find a blank piece of paper and I'll sign.